It's Wednesday, the 25th of May, 2016. Happy birthday to Marcelo Huertas, Derek Williams, and Normie Powell. Basketball Monster Show brought to you by Loot Crate and Org Mater. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be like Org Mater and sponsor the podcast, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes and you can become that sponsor. So thank you to Org Mater and everyone else, of course, who has done that throughout the season. We're here to talk Sacramento Kings season in review today. But before we get into that, just a quick note on the NBA Conference Finals that are going on. Another massive win by the Thunder, and the Warriors look in a lot of trouble. They've obviously got to win three straight now, and you have to say that the odds are very, very well and truly stacked against them at this point. The Thunder are just dominating, and it's pretty interesting stuff. Now, I really like the Warriors. I like the Thunder as well, and I am really... I root for teams that have never won before in this sort of situation if my team's not around, so I would love there to be a situation where either of the teams in the finals, whether it be the Thunder versus the Raptors, the Thunder versus the Cavs, where you're going to get something that hasn't happened before for relief for these fan bases. And I think it would be tremendous. I love the Warriors as well. I think they're fantastic, and I'd love for them to do it for history's sake and for how good they've been. But I don't think we're in a real... I think it's a win-win situation. No matter to me whoever gets into the finals, I think it's a win-win situation, because I can see the joy in all of these teams winning, and there's something special behind all of it. So that was just a quick word on the NBA Conference Finals. But now
let's get to it.
Let's talk Sacramento Kings. Let's talk the most dysfunctional franchise in the NBA at this point. Let's hope that things get turned around. But while Vivek Ranadive is in charge, while he's owning the team, you think it is going to be a struggle. So many issues last season with George Karl, or even the season before with George Karl. Issues with Vlade Divac, not understanding the salary cap, not understanding the CBA, making ridiculous trades, including that trade with the Philadelphia 76ers to open up cap space by trading away Karl Landry, Nick Stauskas, and those first-round pick swaps, and an unprotected first as well, which was just a ludicrous trade as it happened, and it looks like it's going to continue to get worse for this team. Divac needs someone that can understand the cap. They've started to bring some more people in. The hire of Dave Yeager as the coach, I think, is a really good step forward for this team. I think he's going to be a positive influence on the rest of the players on the roster in this team. And I think that we know what he was able to do in Memphis, but everything he did in Memphis doesn't necessarily translate over straight over to Sacramento, which we'll talk about as we go through as well. The Kings finished 33-49, still searching for that playoff spot that has been eluding them for quite a while. They might be looking for that again next season in that 8 seed spot, but there's going to be a lot of teams that are challenging for that. They have the 8th pick in the draft, which they seemingly have every single season. They have the 59th pick in the draft as well, which came from the San Antonio Spurs from the Ray McCallum trade, which happened over the offseason. Pick 59 is not going to do a huge amount. Pick 8, they could get someone there who could really start to help. But they always seem to have one of those picks between 5 and 10 with Stauskas, McLemore, Willie Cauley-Stein over the last 3 seasons. Now, speaking of Yeager, he comes across from Memphis. And we know Memphis is a team who played a plodding pace, a non-3-point orientated offense that played two bigs in Marc Gasol and Zach Randolph, and the grit and grind and all that sort of stuff. But if you think that Yeager is going to come across and implement that in Sacramento, I would urge caution, because I don't think that's what he's going to do. Because we saw when he took over in Memphis that he was almost fired in the first 5 games for a start. But when he took over, his mantra was, all right, boys, push the pace. Let's get things flying up and down the court. And until he realized, I can't do that with this team. Or someone had a quick word in his ear, mate, if you don't pull your head in and stop trying to run Marc Gasol and Zach Randolph up and down the court, you're going to get in trouble. So to say that the grit and grind mentality, the slow it down, let's not shoot threes, let's shoot them poorly, let's dump it into the post mentality was his, I think is false. So I don't think we can really translate much from the pace that the Grizzlies have played under Yeager, the play style under Yeager. We can't translate all of that across to the Kings. Now, I think that bears good news for DeMarcus Cousins, because Boogie is one of the more effective players, obviously, down low in the post. Offensively, he's fantastic. And Jaeger's had experience with Randolph, with Gasol playing down there. And that could work wonders for Boogie. It could also work wonders for Willie Cauley-Stein playing alongside Cousins, because Jaeger's got that experience playing two bigs together, where a lot of teams don't do that now. But Jaeger is not married to that style. I don't think it's his chosen style. I don't think it's his chosen type of game plan. As I said, he will be happy to get running. He'll be happy to install some more ball movement and some more three-point sort of play into an offense. I don't think he's going to be bogged down and turn Sacramento into Memphis West. I just don't think that's going to be the case. So if you're shying away from Sacramento players through dynasty value or next year in drafts because you think, oh, it's going to be like Memphis, no one's going to shoot, it's going to be slow, I don't think that's going to be the truth. I could be very wrong, as I am on plenty of things, but I just don't think that that's going to be the way that Jaeger approaches things. I didn't mention it, but if you are watching this show live on YouTube, which you can do with any show, and you want to interact with me on Twitter, tweet at me at redrock_Beeble. That is the best way to get in contact with me at any time, but especially while the show is going to air. Today's podcast is brought to everybody, by Loot Crate. And Loot Crate, as you're well aware by now, it's a monthly subscription box service. It's for epic geek and gamer items and pop culture gear. The cost per month is less than $20, and every month you get between 6 to 8 items, including licensed gear, apparel, collectibles, and unique one-of-a-kind items. We have our own website for Loot Crate. It's not lootcrate.com. That's for the others. That's for the plebs who don't get the benefit of the discount. You go to lootcrate.com/redrock, and then you can activate our coupon code, which is redrock as well, and that saves you $3 off any new subscription. So just visiting lootcrate.com/redrock goes a long way to tell the Loot Crate people that, yeah, their advertising's working and the support of the show doesn't go unnoticed. But then if you love what they've got, and why wouldn't you? There's heaps of stuff over there. You can get stuff for your kitchen, t-shirts, pins, carryable items, figurines, all that sort of stuff comes in your box. And if you like it, you save $3 by using my coupon code, which is redrock. So if you've got a spare 30 seconds, type into your browser lootcrate.com/redrock, visit the site and check out all the goodies that those guys have got happening over there. All right, back to the Kings. Let's talk about their impending free agents. The big name here is Rajon Rondo, who they signed to a one-year $9.5 million deal. We're going to talk about him soon, but all the talk coming out of Sacramento, and this is, to me, is a positive sign, is that they will not be willing to break the bank to sign Rajon Rondo, and that is great. They shouldn't re-sign him, in my opinion. He put up some really good numbers. He translated well into fantasy, but in terms of his actual play, I don't think it's necessarily a massive positive for a guy who's probably going to be commanding, let's be honest, he's going to be commanding, you know, $15, $20 million a year, maybe. Maybe. It's going to be a fair chunk of money. So is that a great way to spend it on a 30-year-old point guard who, to be honest, isn't a massive positive on the court? And when I think that you've got a guy who's the backup in Darren Collison, who's actually a better fit and a better player than Rondo, I don't think that they should be spending up money to retain his services. He's the big name. You've got James Anderson, who has opted out of his player option, which was for $1 million. You've got Seth Curry, who has also opted out of his player option, which was also for $1 million. I don't think Anderson is necessarily going to make a huge amount of money because he wasn't good, but Seth Curry was tremendous down the stretch, and he is going to make himself some serious money. And by serious, I mean, he, instead of making $1 million a year, does he make $5 million a year? That's a possibility, because he showed that he could be a backup point guard. He could play the backup too as well. Probably not a starter caliber player, but definitely someone who should be on more than a minimum contract at $1 million. So he is going to find himself getting a nice three-year deal, maybe $10 million, maybe $12 million, maybe more. Who knows in this current cap climate, but he is going to find himself a pretty decent deal. We have Eric Morland, who's a restricted free agent who struggled with injury all through the season. Nothing really too much to get excited about with him. And my boy Dujay Dukan, who's got an unguaranteed deal, who I was waiting all season for him to play at least one game, and he did it at the very end of the year in the last game of the season. So who knows if he gets retained. That remains to be seen. So that is their free agency situation at this point. Let's talk about these players individually on the Kings. And of course, if we're talking Kings, everything must start and must end with DeMarcus Cousins, who is a polarizing figure. I think it's pretty safe to say he Some people love him, like myself. Some people hate him, hate his attitude, hate all that stuff that he brings, which is which can be a big negative. Now, he only played 65 games. He has had injury problems almost every season throughout his career, He played 35 minutes and had 27 points per game. He hit 1.1 threes a game, which was just a massive increase for Cousins. Throughout his career, throughout his career, he had hit a total of, I'm just adding it up as we go along here, 11 three-pointers. He hit 70 this season. That is such a big jump. Yes, he only did it at 33%, but that is not a horrible conversion rate. He had 11.5 rebounds, 3.3 assists, 1.6 steals, 1.4 blocks. The problem with what Cousins did this season is his percentages dropped. His field goals were down to 45 from 47, and his free throws from 78 to 72, and that caused him to have a drop in his rankings. Last year in 9 cat leagues he was 10th, this year he was 20th. Last year in 8 cat leagues he was 7th, this year he was 10th. But post All-Star he was back up there. He finished 7th in 8 cat post All-Star. He's 8-2 punting rankings. He finished 5th post All-Star. He finished 10th for the entire season. So to me, he is still a first-round talent. And in a lot of spots, you're going to find him drop out of the first round because people do get hung up on a lot of things. Oh, he turns it over too much. You know my thoughts on turnovers. Don't give a shit. I don't care that he turns it over 4 times a game. It doesn't bother me. The percentages, yes, they are a little bit of a concern, but they weren't things that couldn't be rectified. And you know, the fact that he shot 72% from the line on 10 attempts, which is obviously a truckload, it's a bit of a bother, but it's not that it can't be recovered from. Yes, and people also get hung up on this as well. Oh, he's a center. He shot 45%. Fine, whatever. Punt field goal percentage if you want. Draft someone else later on with a big field goal percentage. You can easily recover from that field goal percentage. We do get hung up on things a lot like, oh, my wings don't shoot any threes. Don't worry about it. Find it somewhere else. He's a point guard who doesn't get any assists. That's fine. He fits your team in different ways. Everyone has their talents. And Boogie shooting a low field goal percentage, you'd prefer he shot 52%. But he can't be awesome in every single category. And that's something you do have to bear in mind. I think that it takes a jump up next season with George Karl gone, with Jaeger in there, who is used to more working with, you know, a bigger sort of front line. I think that he recovers from that. And I think that he is going to be an underrated player heading into next season. As for Dynasty, the jury is obviously still out on DeMarcus Cousins. And as you'll see, as we go through the questions that you guys have sent in about the Kings, there is obviously some concern with lots of people who own him or consider him in Dynasty. And to me, that means it's a good time to try and buy. Because if you believe that DeMarcus Cousins is a top 10 player, as I firmly do, his owner might not think that, and there's a huge possibility that they don't think that. But you get a guy who's at 27-11, hitting over a 3, 1.5 steals, 1.5 blocks, and 3.5 assists. These are absolutely tremendous numbers. He was basically a positive contributor in every counting stat. The percentage is what let him down, but he gets those back up, and he can very easily. Then we're talking about a top 5 talent. So Cousins is someone who I am a massive fan of. He led the team comfortably in VORP, in box score plus minus, in win shares, and he came third in win shares per 48, a couple of other guys that we'll talk about later, but posted a monstrous 23.6 PER. He grabbed a lot of rebounds, passed the ball tremendously well, actually had the third highest assist percentage on this team. And coming from a center, he can do everything. And I think with a better coach, which is almost undoubtedly that's what Jaeger is, given the position that Karl is in his career at this point, I think that everything is definitely on the way up for me with DeMarcus Cousins. Rajon Rondo. I missed the boat on Rondo this season. I wanted no part of him. I did draft him in one league at about pick 100. And straight after the draft, I started tweeting, like, what have I done? I've just drafted Rondo. I did not anticipate the sort of production that Rondo had. And I think that my overall methodology in thinking about it was pretty accurate. A lot of people were coming out and saying, oh, yeah, but he's in a contract year. He's going to put up a big numbers. Cool. He was in a contract year the year before when he was in Dallas. And he was absolutely shitful. He couldn't do a single thing for Dallas. He was terrible. When he came across to the Kings, he looked okay to start the season, pretty solid. But what George Karl did was he would bench him down the stretch, and he would only play him like 30 minutes a game, 29 minutes a game. And Darren Collison was getting minutes equal to and playing over him in the fourth quarter. And that was me. And all off season, I was saying Collison's the better point guard. Collison's the better player. They're not going to run with Collison. We know that, but it shouldn't take long for them to realize it. But what happened is then Collison got injured. And with Collison getting injured, they had no option but to play Rondo 40-plus minutes, and he started putting up these huge numbers. Massive 20-assist games, big triple-doubles, and they couldn't... Well, Carl couldn't be bothered taking the minutes off him and going back to what was actually happening in that first 2 weeks of the season where Collison was clearly outplaying Rondo. So Rondo turned himself around, definitely, and that's, you know, a lot of credit goes towards him for pulling his finger out after a really horrible season in Dallas. He played 35 minutes a game. He had 12 points. He hit a three a game, which is something he hadn't done really ever. He had 6 rebounds a game, an increase again. 11.6, his highest total in the last 4 years in terms of assists. He got back to 2 steals a game, something he hadn't done since the 2010-11 season. And shot 45% from the field. Again, his best total in 3 years. The free throws, still a worry at 58%, but he only took 2 a game, so it wasn't an issue in terms of being able to cover that. And the turnovers at 3.9, well, you know my thoughts there. The minutes were huge, that's the thing. 35 minutes. What team does Rajon Rondo go to next season where he gets 35 minutes a game? Who takes Rajon Rondo on? Does he go to New York now that Jeff Hornacek is there and he's going to be abandoning the triangle or minimizing the triangle and hopefully running more pick and rolls? Does Rondo go there? Does Rondo go to Memphis and replace Mike Conley, who might leave? Who knows? I don't think... Does he come back to Sacramento? He might, but I think 35 minutes for Rondo is not something that I'm going to be overly optimistic on him doing again. Because he does have his negatives. He does have his drawbacks of what he can do. When we look at what he did in terms of win shares per 48, he was down at 8th in the team, which is not great for a guy. Look, he was 2nd in box score plus minus. He was 3rd on the team in overall win shares, but his defense was poor. Offensively, good numbers. Defensively, negative 2.2 box score, 0.7 win shares as opposed to 2.3 win shares as opposed to 2.3 offense. So a little bit different on the win shares scale. But just not a great defender. He's an okay defender. He's not a great defender. I think his reputation is higher than what he actually is in that category. Still a good passer, but still really an assist hunter. And that pads his stats. And George Karl allowed that. I don't imagine Jaeger will allow that. And that will nullify some of his input. It will probably limit some of his minutes. And look, he was atrocious for a lot of the time on defense. And I'm not sure that's going to fly, depending on where he goes. I am concerned. In terms of his rank, look, really impressive. 51st in 9-cat leagues, 22nd in 8-cat leagues. No way I could have predicted that. He jumped from 186 in 9-cat and 99 in 8-cat leagues. That is a huge, huge improvement, and you don't anticipate that. But I see him going, instead of being the 22nd player in 8-cat, I think getting him back down to the 70s or 75, 80 sort of range is more realistic, possibly even out of the top 100. And with the love that people have for Rajon Rondo, and they do, he's a player, again, who just attracts a lot of love. And I used to really like Rajon Rondo. I still think he's a really interesting player to watch. But from a fantasy point of view, I am definitely not going to be investing a top 30 pick on him. I am definitely not going to be investing a top 50 pick on Rajon Rondo, because I think that a lot of the factors, again, it all depends on where he goes. Or actually, it doesn't really depend on where he goes. I just don't see him being in a situation where he's allowed to go out there. Hey, Rajon, do what you want. Play 35 minutes. Get as many assists as you want. Don't try on defense. Yeah, hurl gay slurs at referees. Do whatever. We don't care. What team is going to allow him to do that? I can't see anyone that is going to put up with that sort of shit, with the lack of effort on defense, with the assist hunting, with the offensive stalling that he did as well. I can't see many teams allowing that. And that means to me, at the age of 30, in a dynasty league, if you can sell him for a top 40 value... I would have done it yesterday. I'd be getting rid of him as quick as I could, because I see a regression coming because of all those factors that I mentioned. If you disagree about Rajon Rondo, tweet at me. Let me know. Send me a tweet and tell me why I'm wrong. Tell me why I'm an idiot and why he's going to be the second coming of Oscar Robertson next season. I completely don't see it, obviously, but it is, people do have different opinions on him. Who else have we got? Interesting comment here on YouTube from EB Time Traveler. He says, I'm curious to see how Jaeger uses Boogie next season. Carl had him more more at the perimeter out of the post, which is why he had those three-point numbers, and with that lower field goal percentage, way more jump shots. I agree with you. That's why I do think that, back to Boogie, because that comment's just come in now, back to Boogie, that's why I do think his field goal percentage takes a big jump, and you get him at a bargain next year, and he's definitely a first-round player to me, and you might not have to take him in the first round. I think that he gets that 45% up to 47, 48, and even if he doesn't hit over a three a game, if he gives you 0.7 threes a game, it's not a big deal. The increase in field goal percentage is way worth it. It's way more worth that from a fantasy point of view than him hitting a three a game. So I agree with you. I hope I mentioned that before, that I think that Jaeger, with the experience playing those big men down low, will increase Boogie's field goal percentage and make him take a leap back up and be a potential top five player. Rudy Gay. Not the best season from Gay. I think that's fair to say. He played 70 games at 34 minutes. That all looks good. And he finished second on the team in points, scoring 17. He had 1.13, 6.5 rebounds, 1.7 assists, 1.4 steals, 0.7 blocks at 46 and 78 with two turnovers a game. They're really nice numbers. They're good for top 50 sort of numbers, 46 in 9 cat, 43 in 8 cat. He's a very solid roto player, contributing just little bits all across the board. Head-to-head, he's pretty decent as well, but he did struggle down the stretch and had a real drop-off. He finished 72nd in 9 cat post-All-Star break rankings, and that is not a good situation for Gay. Always talk is going to come out of Rudy Gay getting traded. He's got two more years left, including one of a player option at $13 and then $14 million. So he's owed $27 million across the next two seasons, including that one player option year, which, given the money around, he might opt out for and go for a two or three year, $30, $40 million contract in that sort of sphere, to just to guarantee some more longer-term money. But he's already 29. Where does he start to go from here, with the NBA seemingly moving away from his sort of game, that mid-range game, the slight inefficiencies? Where does he move from? He has been really good, but it was a drop-off this year. He'd averaged 20 points a game over the last two seasons, down to 17 this year. He saw his other numbers basically hold around the same, but a four-point drop-off is a big deal. And he saw, and especially when you're playing with a guy like Rondo, who is not looking to shoot and will pass more, he took two less shots per game in one less minute. It's a little bit concerning there. His three-point percentage dropped to 34. I am a bit worried about Rudy Gay, but everyone else's worry about Rudy Gay will probably exceed mine. So that means you won't have to pick him inside the top 50. You probably won't have to get him inside the top 60, and you might even be able to sneak him in the 70s. That's probably a little bit wishful thinking, but I reckon that you'll be able to get him at a pretty decent price. You definitely won't have to be able to go and grab Rudy Gay inside the top 40. That's not happening, and I doubt you'll have to go and take him inside the top 50. But Jaeger, trying to think back, did Jaeger have him in Memphis, or was that Hollins? Interesting. I'm not convinced he sees the season out in Sacramento, Rudy Gay. I think that he's definitely past his prime. The decline is starting to come, and I would not be investing a top 50 pick in Rudy Gay, whether that's dynasty or redraft. Wouldn't be giving top 50 value back to try and acquire him. But in terms of a guy who can score and can contribute basically right across the board, including both percentages, he is a very underrated guy in a rotisserie sort of format, and I value him higher in that sort of area rather than a head-to-head type of league. But he can be underrated, he can be overrated, which is a weird thing to say, I know. But it really depends on what your team looks like and the way your draft shakes out. But you get him at pick 60, that might be great value. But someone might say, I need Rudy Gay because he scores 20 points a game, and pick him at pick 40, and you go, yuck, that's not good. To me, his value, it ranges quite a bit. Darren Collison. I love Darren Collison. I think that his first season in Sacramento was tremendous. He was a really fantastic fantasy guy, almost a top 40 guy from, not from, let's not do it from memory, let's have a look. He was ranked 33rd in that season in Sacramento. But the Kings, in all their wisdom, decided, let's bring in Rondo on a one-year deal and play him as the starting point guard, which to me was stupid because, again, I thought that Darren Collison was the better player than Rajon Rondo. And he still, even in his limited role where he only played 30 minutes a game, which is still a fair chunk, but he should have been getting 34 minutes a game, He finished the season 79th in 8-cat leagues and 81st in 79th in 9-cat and 81st in 8-cat leagues. 57 post All-Star break. Yeah, so a really strong second half for Collison as well. 14 points, 2.3 rebounds, 4.3 assists, a steal, 1.2 threes, 49 and 86. So just tremendous percentages for him. And that's what he does. He is a strong percentage guy. He shot 49% from the field this year. He shot 47 the year before. He shot 47 the year before. He shot 47 the year before that. Really, as a point guard, that is a tremendous amount of numbers. If we look back to the year when he started in Sacramento, 35 minutes a game, 16-3 and 5.5, with 1.5 threes, 1.5 steals on 47 and 79. These are really great numbers. And to me, my argument would be if I had a chance to sit down with Vlade Divac and go, let Rondo walk. Let him get paid $18 million somewhere else. You've got a guy in Darren Collison who is getting paid $5 million. That is an absolute bargain for a guy who would be better than the player getting $15 million. Let him run the team. Yes, he's probably going to have to pay up in 2017-18 for him, but he's going to be better for your team moving forward. And I think that, again, it depends on where Rondo goes. But he could be a real steal for you, Collison. I don't think many people will look at him and go, you know what, the last time Rondo wasn't here, he finished 33rd. I might want to get him early. I don't think people will do that. I think they'll go, Darren Collison, let's pick him 70th. And I reckon if you get him 70th, you're going to feel pretty bloody happy about getting him at that spot because he is going to put up numbers, almost no doubt. He was great the first time around. I think he'd be great again. And to me, if for some reason, if you can swing a deal in the offseason now from in a dynasty league for a Collison owner, don't pay a massive amount because he is older than you might anticipate at 28, but he's still got a couple of good years left in him. But if the owner thinks that Rondo's coming back and Collison's going to be the backup again, get him, because there's a massive chance that Rondo's gone. And even so, even in a backup role, backup one, backup two, Collison is going to put up value, and he could very easily impress Dave Yeager enough to go, well, Rondo's not working out here. He's not feeling what I need to do in my offense. So Collison's a guy to look at. He actually finished second on this team in winshares ahead of Rondo, which is obviously mightily impressive. Fourth on the team in winshares per 48. His box score plus minus wasn't all that impressive. Sixth, but still a pretty decent number. A positive VORP, a positive or above average PER. A really nice season for a guy who was shafted to me by the organization by bringing in Rondo when he'd played not flawlessly, but pretty bloody good for a guy that was getting paid $5 million the season before and ran the point successfully with DeMarcus Cousins. And that's another thing. His relationship with Cousins in terms of on court was pretty nice as well. And I really think that Collison is primed for another bounce back season, one that really shouldn't have been interrupted by 1 year of Rondo horndoggery. Omri Caspi. Really, really strong. Actually, I'll start with Caspi. He can only play well in Sacramento, apparently. Every other stop he's had, Houston, Cleveland, just been a turd. Heads to Sacramento, all of a sudden he's a great player. And he was supreme early on in the season. Put up some big numbers. George Karl was starting him when there were some injuries. He'd play him off the bench, play him 30 minutes a night. He was putting up big numbers. And in the end, he ended up with 27 minutes a game, 12 points, 1.5 threes, 6 rebounds, 8.8 steals, 48 and 65, hitting 41% of his threes. But then he dropped off. He had injuries himself, which kept him out. And even when he got back, he just didn't look the same. He didn't look right. And his post-All-Star numbers ranked him 177th in 9-cat leagues, 179th in 8-cat. So a big, big drop-off. What do we do with Omri Caspi, though? Where is his best role? Is he going to start on this team? His best role is probably as a 4. And I would love to see him start next to Cousins, but I think that they were going to still work with that Cauley Stein Cousins front court and play Caspi as a backup 3, a backup 4. He's got a lot to offer, in my opinion. He was a really good 3-point shooter. Obviously, 41% is fantastic. Defensively, he leaves a little bit to be desired. Advanced stats puts him in the top 5 to 6 of most categories: win shares per 48, box score plus minus, all those sort of things. He is 27, so he's not... I initially would have looked at him and gone, yeah, he's probably 29, 30, an older player and coming from Europe. He's only 27, so he does have a few really pretty solid years left, and he's only getting paid $2.9 million for next season. It is the last year of his contract, and I think that he is going to be a guy that should get that 27 to 30 minute a night number. And do we see second half Omri Caspi or do we see first half Omri Caspi? I think that we see closer to first half, and a guy that in your last round of a draft, round 13, round 12, Caspi's a guy to get, because something happens with Gay and Gay gets traded, it's all on for Caspi and he becomes a top 70 upside sort of player. So I do like, if you can get him for quite cheap, which I reckon you can given the way he ended the season, he could have some pretty decent value for next season, maybe the year after. Willie Cauley-Stein. Interesting rookie season. 66 games, 21 minutes, 7 points. Nothing really standing out there. 5.3 rebounds, 0.7 steals, a block, 56% from the field, which is tremendous. 65 from the line, no turnovers. Yeah, pretty okay numbers. Fantasy-wise, where did he rank? Well, 136th for the season in 9-cat, 171st for 8-cat. He is going to have a big jump, I think, this season, because George Karl just refused to, A, play him down the stretch when there was opportunities for him to get 30 minutes a night, and then when he would do something good, refused to give him any credit. Of course he put in a shot. Everyone else set it up for him. He's lucky. He got in the right spot. Never gave him any credit. I think that Jaeger working with him, working with Cousins, is going to work out really well. This is a big, big season to me for Cauley-Stein. I think he's going to be a tremendous asset. He finished second on this team in win shares per 48. He actually finished fourth on the team in total win shares, equal with Rudy Gay, ahead of Omri Caspi. Yeah, a pretty decent, fourth on this team. That's a pretty decent return for a rookie. In terms of defensive box score plus minus, he was third on the team there, just behind DeMarcus Cousins. Third on the team overall in box score plus minus. In defensive win shares, he was fifth. So really good numbers for a guy that in traditional stats didn't really show them up as being tremendous. I still think he can do a lot more shot blocking wise, and I imagine that he can take it up to 1.5, maybe 2. That's probably pushing it a bit, but he could take it to 1.5 quite comfortably this season. Yeah, I think he works on his free throws. He can get them into the 70 range, and to me, he's a guy that in the 10th round, I'm starting to look at him next season. In Dynasty, I don't think he's ever going to be a 15-point, 16-point scorer, but he's going to be a 12-8 sort of guy, 12-9 sort of guy with 1.5 steals, 2-2.5 block upside. I think that's where he sort of ranks to me, and I think he's going to work really well in this Dave Jaeger system alongside Cousins. I think he will develop well. The field goal percentage was tremendous, much higher than I anticipated, and he looks to be a very interesting player to me moving forward. A real lot to like about Willie Cauley-Stein for next year. He will be drafted in pretty much all standard leagues, I would imagine, at this point, and his dynasty value is pretty high. It's going to be harder to acquire him given that he's a rookie and he does have a lot of... I need to find a term for that phenomenon of people loving him. It's just crowd love. He's got a lot of crowd love, and that people do think that maybe he's a little bit better than what he actually is at this point, so that makes it harder to try and pry him from someone. But I think that his game... You're talking about a guy, and we love Nerlens Noel for a 2-steal, 2-block a game per guy. Cauley-Stein can be that. He can throw in 56% from the field. He can get 10 points, 12 points. He can get 8 rebounds and put up some pretty impressive fantasy numbers. So he's a guy that I think is going to be putting up a really interesting sophomore campaign, and I'm looking forward to seeing what Cauley-Stein can do next season. Costa Koufos, not in a great spot. I think Costa Koufos is a really productive player. He's a great backup center, but when your starting power forward is actually a center like Willie Cauley-Stein, that means that when Cousins goes off, Cauley-Stein moves across to the five, and then they put another four in. So they put Caspi at the four, they put Gay at the four, and that doesn't bode well for what Koufos is able to do. Now, when his number was called, he answered the call. 19 minutes a game cost us, 7 points, 5.5 rebounds, 0.9 blocks, 53-55 is his percentages, half a steal a game, nice numbers. And he was a great DFS option whenever Cousins would sit and they wouldn't give Cauley-Stein minutes, and he was a nice stream option. I need 8 rebounds, I need 2 blocks, Costa Koufos might do that for me. I think he's underrated in terms of his overall value in the league. He's still got a pretty hefty chunk of change to come his way, over $24 million over the next 3 seasons. He's only 27 years old, but to me, a Cousins, Cauley-Stein, Koufos front court rotation it's pretty decent. The only problem is that only one of those can play power forward, and he does it at a bit of a stretch, and that is Corley Stein. Or Cousins, I guess, can play the four somewhat as well, but you don't want him to. You want him playing at the five, whereas Kufos would be lost if he was playing at the four, and that does limit some of his effectiveness. Will he get 29 minutes a game again this season? I would say no. I reckon he loses two or three of those, and they start going towards Corley Stein. In terms of his production from an advanced stats point of view, he was okay. He finished 7th in win shares. He was 5th in win shares per 48, but just not in a good spot to get enough minutes. You put him on a team that needs a backup center, and he plays 22 minutes a night, he really can be a threat in those 16-team type of leagues. For the year, he ranked 181st in 9-cat and 215th in 8-cat leagues, which is... you know, it's all right, but it's more for 16, more for 18, 20-team leagues. And I reckon that's probably where he sits if he doesn't start to fall because of those reasons that I mentioned. Speaking of players who fell, Ben McLemore. I was excited for McLemore. Ah, he's got an opportunity. Here it is. This is going to be the Ben McLemore third-year breakout. Yep, it's coming. He's going to be... He'll push top 100, I think, and he's someone that I took a punt on in the last round of a couple of drafts, hoping it turned out. It turns out that it didn't, because he was 131st last season in 9-cat leagues, and this year he was 301st. That is a precipitous drop-off. He was absolutely putrid. Now, it's obvious that George Karl did not like what Ben McLemore could provide, and that's fair enough. But McLemore just didn't do anything to really make anyone like what he was able to do, really. He was poor. He was piss poor, to be honest. He finished 12th on the team in win shares. He finished 13th in win shares per 48. His box score plus minus was 11th at negative 3.2. He had a putrid PER of 8.6. These are horrible, horrible numbers. He finished the season at 7.8 points in 21 minutes. So a drop of 11 minutes a game. He lost almost 5 points per game. He still hit a 3 a game, but he does nothing else. No rebounds, no assists. 0.8 steals, he's decent there. 43% from the field, 72 from the line. The only saving grace is he increased his field goal, his 3-point percentage from 35.8 to 36.2. And that is such a minuscule increase that overall, what does it mean? Now, if we look at his per 36 numbers, they're almost exactly the same from this season to last season, and that's sort of encouraging. It just means that, to me, that potentially, he didn't improve, but is some of the performance of McLemore to do with Karl, and to do with the way that Karl used him, to do with the way that Karl liked him or respected his game or whatever. Maybe Dave Yeager sees him and sees a different type of player and wants him to get out back out there as the starting two guard and plays him 30 minutes a night. For all we know, Yeager might want Seth Curry to be the starting two guard. He might want to run Rondo and Collison. Maybe he thinks Collison's a two. Who knows how they want to run it. But we saw McLemore start. We saw him play very few minutes. And overall, just look very, very poor. It's going to be a real stretch to see him getting into the top 100 for next season. It is his fourth year. He is still pretty young. He's definitely not an old player by any stretch of the imagination. He is currently 23 years old. He's playing, I don't think he gets extended when the rookie extension deadline comes, but he's playing for his restricted free agency. He could be a guy that you end up snapping off the waiver wires in the first couple of weeks and finds himself being a top 100, top 90 guy. The chances of it happening are pretty low, I admit that. But everything seems to be working in his favor. Karl is gone. It's the time for him to rise up. Who is challenging him for minutes at this point? It's not Marco Bellinelli, who was worse, if that was possible. Curry could be gone. Rondo could be gone. James Anderson could be gone. These guys, none of them might be brought back. Yes, they might take another shooting guard at pick 8. That is definitely a possibility too. But McLemore is someone that I'm really interested in. If I can get him at a super cheap price, which why wouldn't I be able to get him a super cheap price in a dynasty format? Because really, who loves Ben McLemore at this point? If you can get him for nothing in a dynasty, why not? He's a young player, and he does have some potential. He is a really good rebounder for his size, and that's something that goes unnoticed. The steals are good. The threes are good. He can be a 75-80% free throw shooter. He can be a 15-point scorer a game, I think. But the odds are definitely against it, and that's why you don't give up very much to try and get him. But you test the waters. You see if it's possible, because it definitely could be possible, because the way he played last season was absolutely putrid. We have EB Time Traveler watching again live, and he says a question. Kings fans were screaming at Karl to give Willie Cauley-Stein more playing time last season. I'm aware. I was screaming at him as well. For the minutes he did get, he was very solid. And if Jaeger gives him a shot, I think he'll be very productive. And I can't read the rest of that comment because it cut off on my screen. But I'll get it up in a second. But I agree with you. He is going to be a real breakout candidate for me next season, Corley Steiner. I'm excited to see what he can do. And I think that Jaeger will be able to use him to maybe not the best of his ability immediately, but pretty bloody close to it. I'm really interested to see how Dave Jaeger happens to use Willie Cauley-Stein at this point. All right, who's the next player we're going to be looking at? I know you don't know because I've got the list in front of me. Marco Bellinelli, he was terrible. He was not good in any stretch. He's 30 years old. He's owed $13 million over the next two seasons. In terms of rankings, 294 in 9-cat, 265 in 8-cat. He got worse as the season went on. His post-All-Star breaks put him outside the top 350. He played 25 minutes a game and had 10 points, 1.3 threes, but less than 2 rebounds, less than 2 assists, half a steal, 39 and 83%, and shot just 31% from 3. And that's what he does. He is a 3-point shooter and couldn't hit any threes. He was just a horrible guy in terms of his box score plus minus, the worst on the team for anyone who got over 1,000 minutes. His win shares on the team were really, what were they? 0.5. That's a horrible number. Again, only McLemore was worse than him in that sense. His win shares per 48, he was 11th on the team, less than Caron Butler. That's how poor he was there. He put up a PER of 9.4. Where does he go from here? He's 30 years old. He is signed for a couple of more seasons, but I can't see him playing the same amount of minutes that he did this year. I just don't see him being that guy who gets 24 minutes. And even if he does, what does he bring? He brings you a guy that if you're in a 30-team league, you might consider. That's really about it for Marco Bellinelli. He is a Sunday streamer. Hey, I need two threes. Hey, Bellinelli might play 25 minutes and hit two. Yeah, he could, but he could also do nothing else. He's not going to have a consistent spot. There is no way for him to really improve. The new coach might help, of course, as it might with everyone on this team, but I think that there is a chance that we have seen the best of him, if it was even that good to begin with. Seth Curry. Not Steph, Seth. He was invisible for most of the season. He only averaged 16 minutes a game in his 44 games. 7 points, 1.1 threes, 1.5 assists, half a steal. But 46 and 83% is really good from a guy who's playing as a point guard slash shooting guard. And he ended the season in his last 11 games playing 30 minutes, 15.2 points, 2.8 threes, 4 assists, a steal, 47 and 91, hitting 48% of his threes. He hit 45% of his threes over the course of the season, and he is going to make some serious money. Whether Sacramento brings him back remains to be seen, but they could bring him back and they could say, okay, McLemore's not working, Bellinelli's doing nothing, let's play Seth as a 2. Let's play him and Collison as dual 1s together. And if that's the case, he's absolutely a top 100 player. But it's all going to depend on where he goes and what sort of role is envisaged by him signing. If they get him, someone signs him to $9 million a year, then shit, he's going to play 25 plus minutes. And that would mean, you know, some pretty interesting numbers from Seth Curry. But if he can only get himself 2 or 3 million, which I don't think is going to be what happens, but then you're a little bit more hesitant about having big hopes for him. His advanced numbers looked really good in just 44 games. He finished in terms of win shares per 48. He was 6th on the team. His box score plus minus, he was 9th, just behind Costa Kufos. Defense is a worry for Seth Curry, but his offensive ability was pretty pronounced over that end of the season. You could tell that DeMarcus Cousins liked playing with him too. So again, it does really depend on where he comes, or whether he comes back to this team, or where he ends up, and what sort of money he ends up getting. But he does have top 100 upside. I've got no doubt about that. And that might feel ballsy, but if he's getting 27, 30 minutes a game and giving you 15 points on super high efficiency percentages and 1.5 to 2 threes a game, you know, 3 or 4 assists a game, a steal a game, these are really good numbers. And he's someone that you have to look out for. And in bringing back a Collison, Seth Curry, 1-2, or you know, backup point guard, starting point guard combination, to me is better than having Rajon Rondo around. So that would be what I'll be focusing on as the Kings. Whether they do it, it remains to be seen. But Seth is a very interesting upside player who, with dynasty leagues, I think you have to pay attention. Now, he is 25 years old, so he's not super old, but he's not super young either. But you should have a look at Curry, see if you can acquire him, see if he's on a waiver. If you're in, say, a 12-team dynasty league, I'd be adding Seth now and just sitting on him and just seeing how it pans out, because he does have the upside to put up some big numbers. He's not going to do what his brother does, we know that, but he's a pretty bloody good, you know, light version. Hitting 48% of your threes is pretty impressive. 45 for the entire season. It's really good. And he showed that he wasn't overawed and he can play in this league. And I think that I'm really excited to see where he goes and what ends up happening with him. Quincy Acey. You would have heard me rant about Quincy Acey quite a bit during the season. I felt he was taking the minutes away from Willie Cauley-Stein, and I don't think I was alone in that, because he shouldn't have been playing. But, well, that's not true. He shouldn't have been playing at the expense of Willie Cauley-Stein. But overall, he was fourth on this team in box score plus minus. He was first on the team in win shares per 48. And he didn't do much in terms of box score stats. He's, you know, 15 minutes a game, 5 points, three rebounds, 0.3 triples, half a steal, half a block, 56 and 74. That's, you know, 39% from three. There's some pretty good percentages. So his efficiency was well up. But he didn't do a huge amount. But when you look at the advanced numbers, yeah, look, some pretty good stuff from Acey. And where does he fit moving forward? Well, he is not a bad backup four behind Cauley-Stein, depending on what they do with, you know, with Caspi and with Gay. But in all honesty, you would want Caspi, you would want Gay playing the four, obviously with Cauley-Stein there as well, over Acey. What does he bring? He is 25 years old, so he's not old. He showed an improvement this year, which is something you can always, if you ask for an improvement for players and they deliver it, you can't ask for much more than that. And he did that and turned in probably the best season of his career. As for fantasy, post All-Star in 9 cat leagues, 191. So that means he's creeping into that must-own territory in 18-team leagues, maybe 16-team leagues. But do I think that he can be better than that? Well, maybe. The reason I say maybe is that 9 cat leagues in per 36-minute rankings, 105th. That's pretty impressive. In fact, it's the best on this team outside of DeMarcus Cousins on a per 36 pro-rated basis. Yeah, better than Gay, who was 108th, better than Collison, better than Cauley-Stein, better than Rondo. You know, if he played the 30 minutes a night, 36 minutes a night, he'd put up numbers. I just don't see any path for him to be able to do that when I would rather have Cauley-Stein, I would rather have Gay, I would rather have Caspi all playing the four ahead of him at this point. New coach might change things completely. They might see something in you. Jaeger might see something in AC. Or you can hit shoot the three. He can play defense. Well, he's not. His defense isn't awesome. It's okay. But to me, he's not someone I'm investing a massive amount on thinking, well, this is the year that it all happens for Quincy AC. There's four players left on this team, and I literally have about five sentences between them. Jim Anderson. He's opted out of his deal. He's opting out of his deal. Cool. Who's going to sign him? He can come down and play for Melbourne United. He's not playing in the NBA next season. Unless his agent must have heard something. Oh, yeah, those games you played where you played 20 minutes and scored 2 points, I really liked seeing that. I don't know why he... Look, $1 million is $1 million. It's not much, but if he thinks he's going to get another NBA contract, I reckon he could be in for a rude surprise next season. Anderson ended up playing 51 games. He scored 3.5 points per game, half a three. He hit his shots at 38% and his threes at 27. And when you're calling Cardi's, oh, I can hit my threes, and you do it at that sort of percentage, well, then there's not much point of you in being in the league. He finished as a negative 4.2 box score plus minus. So he's 4.2 points worse per 100 possessions than an average player on an average team. That is horrible. He had negative win shares. The only player on this team to have negative win shares in 51 games. That is really bad as well. There is just nothing to like for me about James Anderson. Yes, he's 26, but we won't see him in the NBA anymore. Duya Dukan, my boy, he played one game. I'm so glad that he actually played that one game. He had 6 points, four rebounds, two threes, and a steal in that 24 minutes that he played. Cool. He will be better for having played, but his upside to me is not massive. And Eric Morland played only 8 games and had 6 minutes per game and averaged 1.4 rebounds. Again, where does he fit? It's probably nowhere, so I'm not overly interested in any of those guys. I don't think there's much to really get too excited about. Caron Butler. Is Caron Butler going to play again? He has a player option for $1.5 million. He would not get signed if he doesn't exercise that player option. I don't think so. He almost has to at age 36 and get the $1.5 million and sit in your suit for 82 games. There is no point in him playing unless injuries strike. And there's no point in us really doing much with him in fantasy unless something completely baffling happens. And he comes out and now turns back the clock by 10 years. I'm going to take a quick break, and then we're going to start to talk about the questions that you guys have sent in. Plus, I'm going to cover a couple of overseas players that the Kings have got stashed.
This is the part with just the guitar. While we wait on the bass and drums, I'll sing of loving you from afar. Well, here they come and now, me and the sky are on a roll. As we hit the halftime break, the chorus lets you know you can't see what I see.
I want to bring them up because they're the two players that came across in that ridiculous Nick Stauskas first round draft pick trade with the Philadelphia 76ers. They were two second rounders from the 215 draft. They'd be pretty old then. The 2015 draft. They are Luka Mitrovic and Arturas Gudaitis. Now, Mitrovic is a Serbian. He's a wing player, 6'8", weighs 200 pounds. He's 23 years old already. Didn't do much to really excite. He played 18 games this season, started 14 of them. He averaged 8 points per game. He averaged 0.7 steals, 0.6 blocks, 4 rebounds. He shot 39% from 3, so that's interesting. He shot 53% from the field, so that's also interesting, and 72% from the line. So some overall decent numbers from Mitrovic, but nothing where I go, okay, we need to start looking at him from a dynasty point of view. His advanced numbers over there were okay as well. Win shares of 1.83. He put up a PER of 17.2. He had an offensive rating of 111.8 and defensive of 92.2. So obviously a big positive in that sort of area. You know, massive true shooting at 63% as well. So he does have some talent, Mitrovic. But we don't know when he's coming over at this point. You'd have to think he's probably another year away at least. And even then, he sort of projects as rotation at best. The guy I'm a little bit more excited about is Arturas Gudaitis, who's a bigger guy, maybe a power forward center, but not like the Kings need that sort of player with Cauley Stein and Cousins around. Although if Cousins leaves in a couple of years, Gudaitis could come across and produce something in that spot. He's 22 years old. He's 6'10", 253. He plays in Lithuania. This year he played 41 games. He started just 16 of them. He averaged 9.7 points. He averaged 6 rebounds a game. He shot 64% from the field, which is something that's interesting to me. He shot 50% from threes, but not on very many attempts at all. 0.7 blocks, which is not bad in 18 minutes. To me, he's a guy who looks a little bit more interesting than what Mitrovic does. His win shares were through the roof, 5.4 and 3.7 offensive win shares at big numbers. He had a PER of 25 and an offensive rating of 129 and defensive of 98. That is a plus 30 difference between his offensive and defensive rating. He's playing in Lithuania. When he played in the Lithuania League, he was dominant. But even when he played in the Euro Cup, he still put up some pretty decent numbers off the bench. Shot, you know, had a true shooting of 70% in his 5 Euro Cup games. To me, if you're talking really deep leagues, and I'm going to have a look at him in the Red Rock Dynasty League, Arturas Gudaitis is someone who I would see if I could somehow stash. And it has to be deep. You have to be 400 players deep at least in a league. But Gudaitis could come across, he could give two or three decent years where he's a 300, 250 ranked fantasy player, and that can be useful if you can get him for nothing. So keep an eye on him. Mitrovic I'm not as keen on, but Gudaitis I think is an intriguing sort of talent. Let's answer your questions now. Daniel Padilla, do you think Seth comes back? It all depends on money. I think yes. If I had to go one way, I would say yes, but I just don't know. But anyone who gets him, he's going to be in I think he can play the backup point. He can play the backup two. And he looks like he's going to be a real valuable piece. Ben Clark on Twitter at @scouse_raw. Has the good ship Ben McLemore sailed? Would a trade help or hurt him? I would have said helped him before the George Karl firing and Dave Yeager coming in. As of now, I think he's got a new lease of life. Can he go back to getting 30 minutes a night and averaging 14 points and 1.5 threes with a pretty aggressive rebounding shooting guard? I think that it hasn't sailed, but this is it. This is the season. If it doesn't turn around here, if he doesn't show some improvement here, then he's in trouble. But he did shoot 36% from three, so it's not terrible. He's a 43% shooter from the field. Again, a good rebounder, good with steals, good scorer. It hasn't sailed, and this is a perfect time to get him at absolute rock bottom prices in dynasty formats. Joe Buck says over under on Rondo staying. I don't think Rondo stays. I think he goes somewhere else. I would say 75-25 on him going. Where are we? D. Kens on Twitter at GQ Dickens. Is this the year that Batum, Giannis, Middleton, and Wade all get drafted before Rudy Gay? Okay, let's go one by one. Batum, absolutely. He should have been drafted before him this year. Giannis, no doubt. Giannis is going in the second round in a lot of places. Chris Middleton, 100%. There is no doubt on Giannis, Middleton, or Batum all go ahead of Gay. Dwayne Wade, I'm not so quick to put Dwayne Wade ahead of Rudy Gay. And if you're taking Dwayne Wade ahead of Rudy Gay, I think at this point, you're probably making somewhat of a mistake. Yes, Wade was good. He was relatively healthy. But the man's 34 years old. He is going to have a decline. And we saw some ridiculous form from him in the playoffs. But he's not going to be able to do that over the course of an 82-game season. And I would much prefer to have Gay than Wade at this point. Matthew Pugsley Muir on Twitter at Adonis Muir. I'm in a keep three players league. How do you forecast Willie Cauley-Stein going forward? Well, there's a lot more context needed there. Is it 30 teams? Because if it's 30 teams and you keep three players, then Cauley-Stein could easily fit inside a top 90. If it's 12 teams, then I don't think there's any point in holding on to Cauley-Stein in a keep three players league. You keep three players, it's really hard to keep someone who you might not be a top 100 player for 2 years. You want to keep your hands on the best talent as much as you can, because it's really different. The fewer players you keep, the less you can gamble on someone. Again, keeper rules is different as well. Maybe it's you can only keep players drafted outside the first 10 rounds, and you keep a player and you sacrifice that pick. So if you picked Cauley-Stein in round 13, then maybe he's worth keeping as one of those spots, as opposed to if you picked Rudy Gay in round 5. And that's probably not a good use of a 5th round pick, but it's a great use of a 13th round pick to get Cauley-Stein. So it's a lot dependent there. But if it's just straight up, I keep 3 players, and I'm not keeping Cauley-Stein, because surely you have 5-6 players better than him. I do think he's going to have a massive breakout, but not enough to be a top 3 player on a team within the next 3 seasons. Eric Wagner asks a very interesting question, which is not one that I can really give an answer to. He says, how much does Cousins' stats rely on him being on a bad team? Would he fall out of the top 10 if he's traded to a team with other quality players? I can give an answer. I can't give an answer that I know is correct. My opinion is that I don't think it has anything to do with him being on a bad team. DeMarcus Cousins is a superstar. He is a supremely talented player that if he gets to a better team or a better environment, he will get better. I don't think it comes from the fact that he's on a bad team. He will get better in a better situation, in my opinion. So he gets with another good player around him, I think he becomes a better player. Would he fall out of the top 10 if he was traded to a team with other quality players? No, I don't think he would. I think that he would take a step forward. He is that good. And a lot of people don't view him as such, but he is a potential top 10 player in the league. And for fantasy, he already is a top 10 player. I have no concerns. I don't think it's good stats, bad team sort of guy at all. I think no matter what team he go onto, with the exception of maybe 3 or 4, whatever team he goes to, he is the best player on that team. It's not Oklahoma City. He's not the best player in Golden State. He's not the best player in Cleveland. But you put him on, he's not the best player in San Antonio. You put him on Toronto, he's the best player. And they're a conference final team. You put him on Atlanta, he's the best player. You put him on the Clippers, probably not. You put him on the Blazers, he's probably the best player. You know, Damian Lillard might have something to say about that, but he's probably the best player. The Mavericks, he's the best player. The Nuggets, he's the best player in pretty much every team, but bar five or six maybe. Put him on the Heat, he's the best player. He is the best player on a lot of teams in this league. So I don't buy into that at all, Eric. But it's a really good question, and I do thank you for asking it. All right, we are done for today's podcast, guys. I'm going to be doing the New York Knicks podcast next. I'm not sure if it's going to come tomorrow or not. We'll wait and see, but you know it will be there. And the best way that you can find it is, of course, by subscribing either on YouTube or on iTunes so that whenever an episode comes out, you get it first off without having to go searching for it. Oh, I wonder if a new episode's coming. Subscribe. The episodes will come to you as they're released. Follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball and BasketballMonster at BaskMonster. And of course, Hardwood Paroxysm has all the great articles and podcasts over on that site as well. Good luck if your team is still alive in the playoffs. Good luck if you're still playing Daily Fantasy. Good luck if you're preparing your Dynasty League. Good luck when I announce the applications for the couple of Red Rock Dynasty Leagues that we're going to be doing, which will be coming hopefully pretty soon. Some more information with those will be coming in the next couple of weeks. We are done today, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.